Welcome to the podcast that helps you build wealth and thrive in a world of out-of-control central banks and big governments. This is the Rebel Capitalist Show.
Hello, fellow Rebel Capitalists. Hope you're well. Enjoying your Sunday evening. I've got kind of a little, I wouldn't call this thing a sweater, but like a little kind of over shirt, like a golf shirt kind of thing, long sleeve. Believe it or not, it's kind of cold today in Medellin. That's very, very unusual, but it was maybe 65 degrees, kind of a little drizzle today. So it's a little chilly here. I got to keep warm, but let's dive into your questions. Let's see what we got. Lots of stuff to talk about with what's going on with Russia and boy, what's going to happen here? There's a lot of variables, that's for sure. So let me get into the questions, take as many as I can. Let's see here. Well, I guess before we get into that, I'm looking for a question. Guys, make sure you check out rebelcapitalistlive.com. We've got some great speakers. I've been talking to, I don't know if I can say their names, but I'm talking to some incredible people that we haven't had at a Rebel Capitalist Live yet that I think are going to blow you away. Some of my favorites. I'm sure some of your favorites as well. So definitely check out rebelcapitalistlive.com. You can see a list of our current speakers, but we're going to be adding probably 4, 5, 6 more. All right. Let's see. How come no one listens to me? Well, I can't answer that question, Greg. Has Colombia lifted the mandates? They're starting to. They weren't really enforced at all here, to say the least. They had that the medicine mandate, and I've gone out. You know, I eat out at restaurants pretty much every meal, cafes, go to the gym almost every day, which is in a hotel. And I've been asked for the card maybe 2 or 3 times, something like that. When I got here, the mayor of Medellin got rid of the mandate for outside. Some people still wear the mask, which I find really bizarre. But it's like the United States. It's gradually winding down. I think the United States will actually do it before Colombia. But what I've noticed is a lot of these countries, they kind of just do whatever the United States is doing. And so as it winds down in the U.S., I think it will wind down here as well. But as far as it being like impacting what I do daily, it doesn't impact it any more than it was in Arizona or something like that. Not that I like it, but thoughts on going long emerging market equities in the very long term? Well, I think you've got to compartmentalize which markets you're talking about. I'd be careful with that right now, just because of the volatility with the geopolitical situation. And in times of stress, people are going to gravitate toward treasuries, the dollar, and maybe even the U.S. stock market. So it's risk on, risk off type of question. And usually those emerging markets are kind of risk on. So I would kind of wait on that unless they're getting like super, super, super cheap. And then you might be able to use that as an opportunity to get a really good deal. So, I mean, the thing that I'm doing for my own portfolio right now is I'm just holding a lot more cash than I normally would. Just because it's to say that what's going to happen with Russia is unknown is the understatement of a lifetime. And there's some heavy duty risks. You know, we're not dealing with Iraq here. You're dealing with a country that has 6,000 nuclear weapons. You're also most people don't know this, but you're also dealing with a country that from a nuclear standpoint is far superior to the United States. I'm not just talking about the number of weapons. I'm talking about the sophistication of the weapons they have. They have submarines, as an example, that are very difficult for the United States to detect. They have missiles that go right up over the North Pole, which are almost impossible for the United States to detect. They're far more advanced in that than we are. And I think hopefully the powers that be in the United States know that. I'm sure they do. But we're in a very precarious position right now, to say the least. And, you know, I'm not saying there's going to be World War III or a nuclear war, but I'm saying the probability is above zero. And even if there's a very low probability, the outcome is so devastating that you've got to pay attention to it. You know, even if there's just a 1% possibility that happens, that, again, you're talking about at very best killing, what, hundreds of millions of people, at best, potentially wiping out humanity as we know it. Even if there's just a 1% chance of that, that still has me concerned, right? So again, I don't want to go down that path. I'm sure we'll get some questions about that tonight. I'm happy to share more of my thoughts on it and the research that I've been doing over the last week or 2 weeks, really. But the point there is that we could be headed for some risk off type of environments or markets. And so I think, although you are paying a huge penalty for having cash with that negative carry, especially if you're in the United States and your expenses are denominated in dollars, I think it's worth it right now just to have the optionality and the liquidity. Not saying that I'm 100% in cash or anything like that. I'm just saying that I've got more cash than I usually do. With the ruble falling, why hasn't Russia backed the ruble with its 2,300 tons of gold? Well, I don't think you gotta, you know, most people, most Americans look at the ruble crashing and they think it's bad. And it is. It is to a certain degree. But like anything in economics, there's pros and cons. And you know, there's trade-offs, as Thomas Sowell would say. So, you know, I find it interesting that here in the United States, we've wanted to keep our currency devalued, or the Keynesians at least would say, oh, we need a cheap dollar. You know, it's going to boost exports. But yet when the ruble falls by 50%, somehow that's not good. You know, where are the Keynesians now? Why isn't Paul Krugman saying that the Russian economy is going to boom if all you need is a cheap currency? But also, look at what happens to profits. See, you got to remember that Russia is a huge player in commodities. That's a large percentage of their economy. Well, what are commodities denominated in? You guys know the answer: dollars. So let's just think this through. If you're a commodity producer like Russia and your expenses are denominated in rubles, but your revenues are denominated in dollars, what happens if the ruble goes from 70 to 140? You just increased your profits massively, because your expenses relative to your revenues decreased just overnight. It decreased, your expenses decreased by whatever the ruble went down by. So I'm not saying that, you know, it's a great thing, but there's some good things for them with their currency going down. So my point there is, don't think that just because the ruble is falling that they don't want it to fall. Maybe they do. I think there's a lot going on behind the scenes here. And everyone in the mainstream media likes to make this claim that Putin is just kind of lost his marbles and he has no leverage whatsoever. And this is just an act of pure desperation to try to inflict pain on Ukraine, or you know, take Russia back to where it was prior to 1990, when the Soviet Union collapsed, or, you know, something like this. And listen, I'm no fan of Putin. And as you guys know, I'm a libertarian and I hate all war. I hate the fact that Russia invaded Ukraine, but I also hate the fact that the United States invaded Iraq. And a lot of people say, oh, George, you can't, that's apples to oranges comparison. Yeah, except tell that to the people who died as a result. You know, all the people, all the innocent people in Iraq that died as a result of our invasion, I don't think they care that it's an apples to oranges comparison. They're still dead, you see. So my whole point there is not to defend Russia, but it is to say I would be highly skeptical of the mainstream narrative that Putin has absolutely no plan and is just flying by the seat of his pants. And this is all just a complete act of desperation. One chart I would use to illustrate my point is go back to 2014. This is Crimea, right? When they had the issue with Russia. Look at what Russia has been doing since then. They have been buying gold hand over fist, right? Why is that? Is that just they didn't have anything else better to do? Don't you think there might have been a strategy there? Maybe. Maybe. I think there's a lot more to the story here. Once you scratch beneath the surface, and if you buy the mainstream media, this is nothing more than just some sort of Mission Impossible movie where the bad guy just completely loses his sense of reality and just, it's up to Tom Cruise to come in and save the day. This is not that simple. This is a very complex situation, and I would lean towards the probability that there's a plan here, and maybe the ruble falling is part of that plan, and maybe collecting or growing their position to 2,300 tons since 2014, maybe that's part of the plan as well. And you got to look at the timing of this, right? Is it just a coincidence that he started to do this right when Germany and Europe was at their weakest point as far as needing his energy? Did he do this? Was it just coincidence that the United States is in an extremely vulnerable position politically, or the politicians here, from a standpoint of consumer price inflation? And the main pressure point for consumer price inflation in the United States is gas prices. Is it coincidental that he went in right during the time when the CPI print comes out at 7.5? I don't know. But I think it's foolish for us to not consider that a possibility. And then once you consider that a possibility, then ask yourself why. Why would they want the ruble to fall? Why would they be buying gold hand over fist for the last 7 years? Why would they be doing that? And then what's the connection with them supplying gas? What's the connection with them being a massive exporter of commodities, most specifically oil and natural gas? And what's going on with the fact that most of the source materials for fertilizer, or a good percentage of the source material for food fertilizer, comes from Russia? What's that do to food prices? What's the fastest way to have social unrest? What was the Arab Spring all about? It's about high food prices, wasn't it? Are we dealing with just a bull in a china shop here? I don't know.
Hey guys, I want to remind you to get your tickets to Rebel Capitalist Live. This is the live conference I do twice per year with all of your favorite speakers from the Rebel Capitalist show and experts in investing, commodities, real estate, freedom, and liberty. All of your favorite topics, all of your favorite speakers. The next Rebel Capitalist Live is going to be in Miami, and tickets increase in price as we get closer to the event. So go to rebelcapitalistlive.com right now to get your tickets to the next Rebel Capitalist Live. It's the conference you cannot afford to miss. It'll help you increase your financial freedom and, more importantly, your personal freedom. You'll get intel that you won't hear anywhere else. Past speakers have included icons in macroeconomics, investing, and personal freedom and liberty. People like Dr. Ron Paul, Robert Kiyosaki, Brent Johnson, Lynn Alden, Jeff Snyder, Richard Werner, Mark Moss, Lynette Zhang, and Robert Breedlove, just to name a few. So once again, go to Rebel Capitalist Live right now and get your tickets today.
Can you tell us what effect this global crisis will likely have on the value of the U.S. currency? That's almost an impossible. I think short term, the more volatility you have, or the more volatile the situation is, the more the dollar is going to go up. The dollar is a safe haven currency. That's, a lot of us don't like to hear that, but that's the fact of the matter. So you're going to see dollar go, you know, shooting towards 100. If this escalates with Russia, if Russia, Groman was talking about them pricing their oil in gold, or demanding gold for payment of oil and that gas. So in that scenario, you know, what happens to the dollar? I don't know if anything happens to the dollar, because against goods and services and against other fiat currencies, because every fiat currency absolutely plummets relative to gold. You see, it's not just what happens to the value of the U.S. currency, the value of the U.S. currency against what? That's what you've got to ask yourself. Now, if this is a move to try to bump the petrodollar off its high horse and to start pricing oil and gold, then there's going to be less demand for dollars, obviously. But does that decrease the dollar on the DXY? It depends on what other currencies are doing. It depends on what other governments are doing. It depends on what's happening to dollar-denominated debt. Now, we would assume that the dollar-denominated debt as a percentage of global debt would go down if it's not needed to buy oil. Or if, let's just say we get this bifurcated global economy like we had. I mean, most of you, I'm assuming, are around my age. You remember the Cold War. That's the way it was. You had certain countries that just did business with one another, kind of the East. And then you had the West, and they did business with each other. We didn't have this whole globalization thing that we have now. So let's just say that we go back to that. Well, then you've got the West, and they're probably still pricing oil in dollars. And then you've got the East, maybe they're pricing, or the BRIC nations, Brazil, India, China, Russia, South Africa, etc. The Arab nations. They're pricing oil in gold. And what does that do to the dollar? Again, I think longer term it goes down. Now, does that lose the reserve currency status? It might be the reserve currency with the countries we do business with. Maybe it's the reserve currency of the West and not the East. I don't know why we can't have two reserve currencies. So then again, going back to your main question, which is very... obviously, once you go down the rabbit hole, it becomes very complex. What happens to the value of the currency? I think compared to goods and services, Renardo, it goes down dramatically, because in that bifurcated world, the West would have to produce so much of the stuff that it gets from the East. Said another way, all the labor input for the majority of the stuff that you buy at Walmart would go from $3 an hour to 20. If the labor input cost for the stuff that you buy at Walmart and Home Depot goes from $3 an hour to $20 an hour, what does that do to the value of your dollar relative to the stuff that you have to buy at Walmart and Home Depot? It goes way, 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 way down, right? But then what does that do to the dollar against the euro? I don't know, it might go up. What does that do to the dollar versus gold? It goes down like it's gone down against Bitcoin almost, if that's the end game here. So I've never, there's never been, well, I shouldn't say never. I've only been interested in macro since 2012. But in the time that I've been interested in macro, there has never, ever, ever been a year or environment where there's so much going on. And there's so much that we need to pay attention to. You don't want to bury your head in the sand on this one. You don't want to just say, oh, well, this is too complex for me. Listen, if I can figure this stuff out, you guys can. I'm no smarter than anyone on this live stream right now. It's just you got to do some homework to make sure that you're managing your risk. That's what it's all about. If you look at the greats, oh, and by the way, I'm interviewing Jim Rogers on Wednesday. So guys, stay tuned for that because you know what I'm going to be asking him about. I'm going to be directly asking him what he's doing with Russia. Are you buying? What are you buying? Are you holding off? Are you waiting for a catalyst? As we all know, Jim Rogers this is what he is known for, what's happening in Russia right now. So I cannot wait to talk to him. I'm going to ask him all the right questions, the questions that you guys want him to answer. So stay tuned for that for sure. So I don't know where I was going. I got off on a tangent there thinking about Jim Rogers. But that's really the state of the world is there's so much going on from a macro standpoint that you got to pay attention to it. Oh, that's right. I was saying with the greats, if you look at Jim Rogers, Stan Druckenmiller, Warren Buffett, you know, they don't get everything right. They might get 55% of it, 60% of it right. But what they do and what they're hyper-focused on, what their number one priority is, risk management. Risk management. And I think that's very important to remember in 2022. Just remind yourself of that every single day you wake up regarding your portfolio. Just look yourself in the mirror and say, my number one priority today is risk management. On RTX, so I'm assuming that this is the ETF, the Russian ETF, RTX, massive drop. I'll be asking Jim Rogers. I know, yeah, I mean, Sberbank, Lukoil, I don't know if those are in the ETF, I'm assuming they are. These are down 99%. I mean, these are unprecedented drops. Now, I know with Lukoil and Sberbank, you can't even buy them right now because they're completely frozen. So whatever trades in the U.S., you know, the ADR, the pink sheet or whatever it's called, you can't buy it or sell it right now. It's just frozen, locked in place. Who knows how long that's going to last? Who knows if the Russians are going to allow Lukoil to pay dividends to Americans? Who knows if the United States is going to ban you from owning Russian? There's so much going on right here, and that's why they're cheap, because there's massive, massive amounts of risk. I was talking to a couple of hedge fund managers over the weekend, and we're kind of brainstorming on this, and I said, I mean, it seems to me like if you could buy it right now, not that you can, and maybe you can buy the ETF, I don't know. But if you could buy it, I would just treat it like a call option. Like a call option where you might be paid to own it. And so it's either going to go to zero or you're going to 10x, 20x. If you know, we wake up tomorrow morning, hopefully we will, not for financial reasons, but for obvious reasons that if we wake up tomorrow morning and they sign a treaty or something like that, or the United States agrees, Putin agrees to sit down and talk, and they have some sort of, what was it called? The Helsinki deal or I forgot what but they do one of these agreements. Obviously we want that for humanitarian reasons. But aside from that, you know, that's when you would have that call option that would basically hit your strike price and really pay off. So again, these are questions that I'm going to be pointing and asking Jim Rogers. And so I would defer to him on this question. You guys are going to have to tune in and watch that interview. I'll definitely post it this week for sure. Best investment for next 9 months? I don't really make predictions, John. If I had to go out on a limb, I'd say gold. Next 9 months, I'd say gold. gold or dollars, depending on what you want to buy with those dollars. But I, yeah, gold for me would be number one. What will happen to reverse repo during QT? I think that's a big assumption, Zach. I don't see how they get to QT. That is incredibly low probability, in my opinion. You look at what the two-year Treasury's done, that's told us that the Fed, or it's implying that the Fed is not going to be raising rates 10 times like the market thought they were maybe 2 weeks ago. I would be shocked if they get up to two or three. Jeff Snyder, if you've been following him on Twitter, which I'd strongly suggest, he's been talking about how the euro dollar future curve is inverting even further than it has been since I think it started to invert going back to November, if my memory serves me right, maybe November, December. So that's not a good sign. And what that means, what the smart money, the bond market, what it's telling us is that this rate hiking cycle, if you want to call it that, is going to be incredibly short-lived. So obviously this depends a lot on how things escalate or de-escalate, hopefully, with Russia. If it continues to escalate, I can't imagine the Fed would do more than two or three rate hikes. They might not even get down to zero in quantitative easing. They very well could be doing QE while raising rates. I think that's definitely on the table, which is kind of bizarre to think about it. But the main takeaway there is I think maybe they do two or three and then something happens, something breaks, war breaks out, hopefully not, but stock market crashes and we go right back down to zero and right back up to 120 a month in QE. I would be shocked if we got to QT. But if we did, let's just assume we did for a moment, what happens to reverse repo? I'm assuming you're talking about reverse repo on where the Fed is the counterparty. I don't know, Zach, because I don't know. I mean, who's your buyer? Right? What is QT? It's just when the Fed is selling the mortgage-backed securities and treasuries on their balance sheet. So who's your buyer? Is it the money market funds? I don't think so. I don't think so because I don't know how. I know there's certain rules those money market funds have as to what they can and cannot buy. I know Joseph knows that extremely well. Obviously, Snyder does too, Joseph Wang. I don't know. I think they can own treasuries. I'd be surprised if they can own mortgage-backed securities. Maybe they can. But what would – just kind of my base case there, you'd see reverse repo go down because you'd see money buying the assets from the Fed, and especially if that was the private sector buying, then that would mean less M2 and less – most likely less money in the money market funds and therefore less money that the, or let's call it dollars, less dollars, fewer dollars that the money market funds would be putting in holding at the Fed in reverse repo. And I'm using terms very loosely there at risk of almost being inaccurate that I'm being overly simplistic because we know that that's not really what's happening. It's the bank reserves denominated in dollars that are actually going from the reserve accounts of the banks down into the reserve account of the Fed or the reverse repo account. It's still a liability of the Fed, but the balance sheet reconfigures to a certain degree. It just, again, those bank reserves denominated in dollars go from the reserve accounts of the banks down into the reverse repo account, but there would be less bank reserves going down because there would be less the commercial bank liability deposits denominated in dollars, that those reserves would be backing up because those dollars that were circulating in the real economy, the commercial bank liabilities would be used to buy the treasuries or mortgage-backed securities from the Fed, therefore decreasing the amount that's there, decreasing the amount of reserves possible to go into the reverse repo. That's a far more complicated way of saying what I just said, but more accurate for the sticklers on the live stream today. uh, That's the problem with some of this, especially when you start talking about the banking. You try to explain it or say it in a way that's as simple as possible, but sometimes you say it in a way that's so simple that it actually loses accuracy. That's what makes it really hard to articulate your thoughts well when you're talking about the complexities of the Fed's balance sheet and the commercial balance sheet, or the commercial bank's balance sheets and whatnot. Okay, will the sanctions cause house prices to go up? Okay, Dakota, I'm thinking out loud here. Sanctions, this is not, you got to ask yourself, is this going to make the supply chain disruptions that we already have better or worse? Not better. I think at very best, it stays the same. And most likely, they get worse. Then ask yourself the question, is this going to increase global economic activity or decrease global economic activity? Most likely decrease. It's going to reduce the amount of commodities available to the United States, most likely. So then the question becomes, how does the government respond? How does the Fed respond? But outside of the demand side of the equation, if we just look at the supply side of the equation, the supply side goes down. Therefore, I would assume that most of the input costs for new homes would increase, with the exception of labor, because that's more driven by domestic factors. What I mean by that is, if the stock market goes down by 50%, I think you're going to go from a labor shortage to a labor surplus. So in that environment, the home builders have more expensive input costs on the material side because of the further supply chain disruptions, and there's just less economic activity, less stuff being produced. So longer wait times drives up prices even more. So they could see those input costs going up, while at the same time, the labor costs going down. They could see both go up at the same time, labor costs and the materials. But the probability of the prices overall going down, as far as their input costs, incredibly low, as close to zero as we can get. So even if we go through an economic recession, I don't know that that really dampers, it might damper demand, but I don't know that it increases supply. Although you would assume that it would if demand goes down, but it just depends on how badly those supply chains are being destroyed further than they have been over the last 2 years. A lot of variables there. I think one thing that will give you some wind at your back as far as home prices going up, some tailwind, would be, I don't think that interest rates are going to 3 or 4%. That would be a very low probability outcome. So, I don't, it'd be hard to see an environment where the 10-year is going from, what is it now, 1.7, 1.8, going to 3, 4, 5, 6%. I know a lot of inflationists like to think that the interest rates are just going to explode on the upside in the bond market at the long end, which would drive mortgage rates up. That's not my base case. So I think the Fed will try to raise. I think that'll flatten the curve. I think we'll get a recession. They'll bring down rates again. I think the 10-year still hovers around, 2, maybe 3%. But I don't think that you would have to worry about mortgage rates going to 10% anytime soon. That's for sure. So the fact that mortgage rates will most likely, and again, we're just dealing with probabilities, not certainties, but the fact that mortgage rates may go up, absolutely, in the short term, but over the next 2 or 3 years, I don't know that they'll go up that much. That would give a little more tailwind to the housing prices. Doesn't mean that they go up in nominal terms. And keep in mind, they can go up in nominal terms and go down in real terms when you adjust for their real rate of inflation, or even the CPI, the government's bogus numbers. But that's just, you got to look at all the headwinds and the tailwinds that are involved and try to determine which are going to be the strongest and impact the prices the most. And then once you figure that out, you've got to determine whether the prices are going up or down just in nominal terms or when you adjust for the CPI.
Hey guys, I want to remind you to check out Rebel Capitalist Pro. This is the incredible online investment forum that I have with investment experts Lynn Alden and Chris McIntosh. It includes professionals such as Patrick Serezna from Macro Voices. He specializes in options. Tony Greer, commodity trading. Jason Hartman, real estate. And Brent Johnson with macroeconomics. If you want to build wealth and thrive in this world of out-of-control central banks and big governments, Rebel Capitalist Pro is the resource you need. So check it out today at georgegammon.com/pro. That's georgegammon.com/pro. We'll see you inside with the fellow Rebel Capitalists that are taking their investing to the next level.
Does gold back something mean someone can take the gold other than the something? Yeah, that's what it means. It means that if there's a ruble that's backed by gold, then you can take your rubles down to the bank and say, I want my gold. And they give you the gold. Or the central bank, same type of thing. If the central bank is holding all the gold, and it's basically that's an IOU for gold. You know, if you've got some, I don't have a dollar on me right now, but if you've got just a dollar, $5 or whatever, that's a claim on gold is what that would mean. So that's nothing more than an IOU. IOU what? IOU gold. So by definition, if they owe you gold, you can get it. That's the beauty of a gold-backed currency. That's backed by a hard asset. Should I pay off my house on an ARM? I can't answer that question for you. I prefer fixed rate debt. Where would the Fed fall to if we got rid of, where would the debt fall to if we got rid of the Fed, and what implications would it have on markets? I'm assuming you're talking about the federal debt, the government debt. That's a very tough question. Most people would say, oh my gosh, interest rates would skyrocket. And therefore we couldn't spend as much. We'd have to tighten our belts because we wouldn't be able to afford the debt payments, and we'd have to default, or we would have to dramatically reduce spending and get debt to GDP down to a more manageable level because you don't have the Fed there backstopping the long end of the curve to artificially keep interest rates low. I don't know. I don't know how much of an impact the Fed really has over the long end. I know that, look, if the Fed takes rates from, let's say, Fed funds 5% down to zero, that's going to move the long end of the curve. It's absolutely going to move the long end down. But once you get it to that point, you know, does quantitative easing, does doing all these things, or once you're going up a few rate hikes, does that move the long end too much? I don't know that it does. And what I'd use to back up that argument would be just looking at the Fed's balance sheet and interest rates. You would think there'd be an inverse correlation, meaning when the Fed is doing quantitative easing, interest rates are going down. But you'll see it's the opposite. When they do quantitative easing, interest rates go up. So maybe when they lower rates, Fed funds, that can bring down the whole entire curve. But as far as QE or QT having a big impact, or an inverse relationship to the long end of the curve, which is what it's supposed to have. I don't know. I don't know about that. And also, you know, going back to the 1940s, when they pegged the curve, we had yield curve control explicitly, but I don't know that we needed it. Because if you look at the Fed's balance sheet from 1946 to the end of yield curve control in 1951, they really didn't increase the size of their balance sheet. And this is at a time when inflation spiked up to 19%. So how the hell would that work if CPI is spiking up to 19% and they had the long end pegged at, I believe, 2.5%? How on earth did they not have to increase the size of their balance sheet? Said another way, how on earth did they not have to buy bonds when CPI was at 19%? What that implies is that the market did the Fed's job for them, meaning the yield curve control was all for show. It was theatrics. They didn't, the interest rate at the long end would have been the same regardless of whether they had yield curve control or not. The market implemented yield curve control. The Fed did not. Now, maybe at the beginning, I'm talking about 45. I don't have that chart in front of me. Their balance sheet went up a lot, that's for sure. So they're definitely buying bonds. But again, from 47 or 46 or so till 51, 5 years, they really didn't increase the size of their balance sheet. And rates stayed the same. So, and again, this is with massive, massive negative real yields. Think about that. You got the long end at 2.5 and you got the CPI at 19%, and the Fed isn't having to buy bonds to keep the interest rates low. So I don't know. I don't know if there was no Fed, what the 10-year would be. Would it be 10%? I don't know. It might not. It might be 2.5. It might be 3. It's impossible to answer, but my whole point in going through that thought experiment with you guys is to show you that it's not a simple question. It's not just if the Fed wasn't there, then rates would skyrocket. Maybe not. It's not that cut and dry. Are you still of the opinion the end game is to introduce central bank digital currency? Yes. I don't think it's a matter of if, I think it's a matter of when. And let's just assume for a moment the global elite and the politicians are incentivized for war. Let's say they're incentivized for us to go to war with Russia, meaning the US or Europe to actually get involved. Let's just say they have that incentive. Would that make it far easier for them to introduce a central bank digital currency? 100%. So, you know, it's not that exact phrase that Charlie Munger says where it's show me the incentives and I'll show you the outcomes, but it's more like show me the incentives and I'll show you who's behind it. Maybe that's a better way to say it in this case. Show me the incentives and I'll show you, who is managing the narrative or I'll show you who is behind the scenes pulling the levers. Maybe that's a better way to say it. And I'm not saying that they are behind this, but again, they definitely have an incentive. When you line things up as far as what the politicians want, they want to be reelected. We all know that. Well, the best thing for an unpopular politician is war. That's the best way for them to get reelected throughout history. It's kind of politics 101. And then you look at what the problems are for the powers that be right now in politics. Well, inflation, Cervasa sickness, because of the way they handled it. I think that now they've got so much egg on their face that they would be even more unpopular than they already are because of the retractions from the CDC. Now Walensky is backpedaling like I can't even believe how much she's backpedaling. And if we weren't in this situation with Russia right now, I think the mainstream media would be, or at least the alternative media, would be just tearing that up, and people would be saying, "Hey, what the hell? I lost my job because of your stupid mandates." And now even Walensky is coming out and saying the mandates probably didn't do anything. People would be pissed, rightfully so. And they would take out that anger on the politicians, while at the same time, gas is going from $3 to $4 to $5. That's not good for the politicians. And then on top of that, you got the truckers. Or we're not even talking about them anymore. We're talking about them very little, and we should be. And we owe them huge gratitude. But that was big. That was political suicide for Trudeau. And then when he froze the bank accounts up there, I mean, why did he backpedal so quick? Because the banks called him and said, you're out of your mind. You're absolutely out of your mind. And you're becoming a global pariah for what you're doing. And so if you've got the Trudeau situation, if you've got the trucker situation, you've got the backpedaling of the Cerveza sickness, you've got inflation, and these politicians want to get reelected, there is one thing that solves all of those problems for the politicians. Same thing for the global elite. What do they want? Well, they want central bank digital currency. They want a socialist utopia. They want the global currency to be the ESDR, the digital SDR. They want that to be the reserve asset for the central banks. And they want to further usurp power and control more so than they did during the Cerveza sickness. Okay, well, how do you achieve those objectives? They want a social credit score. They want to take away more of your freedoms and liberties. They're central planners. They want to control your life. They don't even want to take away your liberty and freedom. They want you to give up your liberty. They want you to demand that the global elite and the politicians take away your freedom and liberty. Well, how do you get people to do that? How do you get people to buy into a social credit score? How do you get people to buy into a central bank digital currency? How do you convince them that this is for your own good, that this is for the greater good, that this is for your safety and your security? Easy answer, war. So we can see how the incentives are lined up here. And now, obviously, we all hope and pray that that's not the outcome we get. But I can assure you that if that is the outcome we get, that not only will a central bank digital currency be a question of when, not if, I think it moves to a question of how soon. All right, guys, I'm going to have to leave it there. Do some shout outs here. We got Wayne Smith, Don Juan, Malaysia, Numismatic, Jack Goldman, one, I think it was, Bloodbath McGrath, Red Sky Hobbies, Giovanni Costello, C. Hall, Sam A., Brian Clevenger, maybe, Eric Anderson. Oh, here's a tough one. By Warwick Kick. Oh, boy. It skipped on me. Sorry, I was looking forward to trying to pronounce that name. We got Dominic Stoppe in the house. Oh, who else? We got All Nighter Hider. We got Zero, Silver Hawk, Unvaxxed, No Mask Ed, Crazy Legs. Oh, there it is. By Warwick Keekum Stacker, New Zealand. Cool. Cooper Cox, S. Hall, Guillermo, Sierra, Boy Bro, RR. Let's see, who else? I think I said All Nighter Hider, my buddy in the house, Gregory Stewart. All right, guys, just a reminder, go check out Rebel Capitalist Live. I hope to see you all there last weekend in June in Miami with all your favorite speakers. Check it out. Enjoy the rest of your weekend, and I will see you on the next video.
Thank you for listening to the Rebel Capitalist Show. For more content like this, check out the Rebel Capitalist blog at georgegammon.com or go to the George Gammon YouTube channel.